God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." And because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Look at the universe, just around you, just right now around you, wherever you're at. If you can do this safely, just observe something. Are things falling out of the sky, and is the earth bubbling up beneath you? Are people falling into piles of goo and dissolving before your eyes? Or are you living in a world of predictability? I mean, to a great deal. Great deal of confidence, of predictability. Or regard your week. Did you suddenly develop a sixth finger? If you had a sixth, did it go away? See, you didn't. These are not things that occur. We live in an ordered world, in an ordered universe, ordered in every possible aspect by a planner, the greatest planner, God Almighty. And I've talked about this at length because it is such a striking thing to me, the way people want to pretend that order came from not chaos, but nothing. People who want to believe that the world we live in, the universe and everything in it came from nothing, also believe that a rule set came from nothing. They believe not only did nothing create everything, but it created the rules that govern everything. That means that when there was the Big Bang, billions of years ago, they say, that it didn't just suddenly have a world where there was nothing existed and then something happened, meaning something happened while there was nothing, which in and of itself is insane. But when that something happened and the universe somehow burst into existence, so did gravitational fields. So did orbital fields. So did a planet capable of sustaining life at that very moment. And over time then, chaos, utter chaos, the fittest of the organism survived, the fittest of the molecules, the fittest of the amino acids survive in this great war of primordial soup. Then it created life forms. But not just life forms, rules that govern the life forms. If the life forms do not have water, the life forms do not live. If it doesn't have water for a period of time, if the life forms do not have air for a period of time, they live. Except for the life forms that live underwater, in which case they take the air from the water. It's all governed, all of it. And it makes sense then that the God who created the universe, when he said, "Let there be light," created a set of rules to govern the universe and created a set of rules for us, which we were introduced to in the Bible. And it started with the oral tradition of the Jewish people. And they took that very, very seriously. Doesn't it make sense that the God who created everything, including the rules, left behind a rule book? Of course it does. It matches his personality. It shows us so much about God. And if we take that idea of order and that reality of order to any level, take it to the macro level, the fact is that you are breathing in and out right now. All of us are. Every person hearing this is breathing in and out right now without exception. Macro level. Take it to the micro level. Right now, in our bodies, there are metabolisms of oxygen and other molecules going on at a microscopic level, feeding our cells, cleansing them, giving them energy and cleanliness at microscopic levels. You want to go further than that? We could do that. We can go down into the DNA and the structure of our DNA. The Bible is useful from a macro level, the macro narrative of God pursuing his beloved creation, his masterpiece, mankind. And at a micro level, those who are gifted at the words, studying the words in the Bible, you notice how they can go from this translation to that translation to finding all the ways that God describes love. When we talk about this and we compare it to the world that we live in, and we're in the world and not of it, to me, it is striking. President Trump is going after Harvard University, we're told. He's targeting them. What has Harvard been targeting? Order. It has been targeting order. Harvard wants to bring in whomever to come to the university that we're forced to fund. They believe that they have a right to our federal grant dollars somehow given to them. There's nothing in the order of things that indicates that. Harvard is not mentioned in the Constitution. There's nothing in the Bill of Rights about Harvard. They don't have some distinct right to your money or mine, except they've given themselves this status in the universe as this important organism that must be fed, Harvard. So they aren't particularly concerned about the nature of some of the people who've been going to the university. And you can look at the disorder. When a Jewish student walking on campus is stopped and threatened, I mean threatened in terms of you're not allowed to come here, bodily threats. They're not saying that they're going to hurt him, but they're not letting him on campus. And those people turn out to be employees of the university, employees who then went on to receive extra awards, having prevented a Jewish student from walking onto a campus where he, in an orderly fashion, paid money to attend. It is utter disorder. You look at the disorder being installed in the United States and go back and look at God's order. Right now, without meaning to, you probably swallowed sometime in the past 2 minutes, 30 seconds, 10 seconds. How many times have your eyes blinked? Can you count them? No. Why is your eye blinking? Because it's cleansing itself. It's wiping away dust particles. It's moisturizing your eyes because they need that. Order versus chaos. A federal judge has blocked President Trump's deportation flights, even for murderers with orders dating back to 1999, deportation orders dating back to 1999. Bill Malugan from Fox News. A federal judge in Boston has ruled that the Trump administration violated his order with deportation flights intended for southern Sudan and is ordering that the criminal aliens on the plane, which include five convicted murderers, be given credible fear screenings and 15 days to reopen their immigration cases with access to phones and attorneys, and if they are determined to have a credible fear. Each criminal alien must be given no less than 72 hours notice about their credible fear interview. Judge Brian Murphy has also ordered that DHS must provide status reports on each of the individuals every 7 days. He said DHS can decide to either bring them back to the U.S. for this process, or they can do it overseas as long as they maintain custody of them and give them access to necessary phones, attorneys, etc. It appears the plane landed at a U.S. base in Dubuque and has remained there. We're talking here about people who have been given deportation orders way back. Mugen writes this. Fox News has obtained an ICE document showing that some of the illegal alien convicted murderers on the flight have had active final orders of removal and deportation orders as far back as 1999, 2005, and 2009, and the judge is now mandating that they all receive fear screenings. They were ordered removed by judges. They got due process in an orderly fashion, and this judge is coming in and inserting disorder. From a studio in North Idaho, I'm speaking words. They come out of my mouth with air. They come into this microphone and travel across the country to 181 stations. Well, actually, first back to Randy at AFR, and then to 181 radio stations across the country, because smart people figured out how to transmit the human voice and have it received, because they figured out the order of things. And here is a judge, a district judge, saying, I don't care that these were final orders of deportation. I am disorder. In the spiritual equilibrium, there is one being who represents disorder and one being who represents order. The God of the universe obviously represents order. He is order. He is why the heavens stay where they're at. And the planets don't fall down upon us and the stars down upon us. The disorder we see around us is coming from one side of the political spectrum, in large, the Democrats, in large. because they're absolutely committed to keeping as many criminal illegals here as possible, because all of their hopes to rule America, and yes, I said rule, hinge on this. In the spiritual equilibrium, Satan introduced disorder. In the political world, the left is driving massive disorder. In Oregon, police responded 17 times to a home occupied by Trent D'Agua gang members charged with torture, kidnapping, attempted murder, and this is according to charging documents, 17 times to the same home. Records show that neighbors have reported a disturbing incident at the property, including drug use, sounds of screaming, and an alarming presence of young girls at the residence. Oh, you don't say. Disorder. The God of the universe created order. He is a God of order, not chaos. And people are noticing this. Even lifelong Democrats are noticing this. Listen to this previously lifelong Democrat as she describes what has driven her to become more oriented towards President Trump.
So you were a Democrat.
I was my whole life.
Really?
I first voted for Bill Clinton and voted Democrat every single year until, November.
And what do you think of Trump now? What do you think of his policies on deportation?
You know what? I can't tell you specifics about his policies, but what I will tell you is that it was not for Donald Trump, we might still be living next to gang members, because everything changed after he was elected.
So you feel a lot safer now that he's in the White House again?
I do, because he's taking it seriously. The Democrats simply ignored it. They said it was lies. They won't talk to people who have been victimized by this.
This woman is honest enough to say, I can't go into detail on the policies. I know President Trump takes this seriously. President Trump's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. He is, in my mind, a baby Christian. And look, everybody starts somewhere in their faith. But let's compare that to Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, and saved but an act of God, could have been our vice president. He's speaking at a law school graduation, and he's calling about President Trump's removal of violent illegal immigrants off the streets. Listen to how he describes order versus chaos.
Donald Trump's modern-day Gestapo is scooping folks up off the streets. They're in unmarked vans, wearing masks, being shipped off to foreign torture dungeons. No chance to mount a defense, not even a chance to kiss a loved one goodbye. Just grabbed up by masked agents, shoved into those vans.
He means federal agents, the Department of Homeland Security, often people given 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 hearings with final deportation orders. And Tim Walz says a final order is not enough for him. If you doubt that this chaos is being installed, listen to a Seattle attorney defend a man who was driving 100 miles per hour, drunk, and here illegally, when he smashed into a police trooper and killed him.
And when these three circumstances collided, not only did it result in a catastrophic accident, it resulted in the tragic death of Trooper Gadd, but it is not a crime. Not all car accidents are crimes.
Not all car accidents are crimes. Speaking about someone who was A, in our country illegally, B, driving when he shouldn't have been, drunk, C, going 100 miles per hour. There is nowhere in Seattle where it is legal to go 100 miles per hour. In fact, it's an anti-car city that continues to lower speed limits. From Harvard to that on the streets of Seattle to Tim Walz pretending we have Gestapo agents, to a district court judge with absolutely no logical authority beyond his district, deciding that final orders of deportation aren't good enough for him. We're watching one side of the political spectrum embrace disorder, just as one side of the spiritual spectrum does. We'll come back on The Disciples' View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Next segment, we'll get to cleanup item, Tower of Babel, your personal notes. It's the segment filled with what we call benchmarks in the radio business, things you could expect. In this second segment of the show, we try to focus on being in the world and not of it. That's how Jesus instructed us to live as the exiled elect. And it's so easy to take the world and start to become it and not realize it. And it's happened to me countless times. I've had to ask God to rescue me from being of the world countless times. And sometimes it's just a minute-by-minute thing. Our flesh, we get up in the flesh, as we say. Sometimes it's just really trying to be the kindest of all people. And when we do that divorced from God, when we're relying on our own understanding or relying on our own wisdom, we can fall straight into being of the world and falling into some really, really silly lies. Tim Tebow did this. I've never met Tim. I regard him as a man of absolute faith. So clear that he loves Jesus. He's given his money and his time to wonderful Christian causes. He goes around the world and speaks, and yes, he gets paid for that, for sure. But he's also a man, I think, who's shown great, I don't want to say dignity in the wrong way. He's shown himself to have great comfort in simply, quote, simply, being a son of the king, of Jesus, son of God. And I say that because he had a shot at professional football, and that fell apart. He had a shot at professional baseball, that fell apart. And it was not God's plan for him. And I never saw him respond with bitterness or accusations of unfairness. He simply accepted this role that God's given him. And I think God's given him this role of evangelist and disciple maker. So I don't have any negative feelings about Tim Tebow at all. He just fell into something that can happen so easily in the world where you forget to check something against God's wisdom. And it's vital that we always check things against God's wisdom. He was talking about the sexual abuse of children and who's most likely to do that. And Tim Tebow forgot to check God's design.
The number one offender type is biological fathers. But by far, it is being done by middle-aged Caucasian men. Many, over half of them, college graduates. Many of them are educated, good jobs. This isn't just who we're thinking about. Like, they're you know, technical savvy. And I think that it is time that we call them out. Like, that we can't stand by and stand back.
Fair enough. Let's not stand by and stand back when it comes to the sexual abuse of children. And let's think about something. Do you actually believe that biological fathers are most likely to abuse their kids sexually? Honestly, or even just physically? What's God's design for the family? God's design is for one man and one woman in a married state, save the acts of adultery, staying married. So if God's design is that, how would it be that biological fathers are the most likely to abuse kids sexually? So Tebow read apparently a statistic and glean this information and spit it back without, I think, stopping to check, wait, this would violate God's design. And we're all broken. I'm not to say that biological fathers don't do this. I know that they do. And we can get to the white Caucasian thing later, because there are cultures, that allow sexual contact between fathers and their kids. And I don't want to focus on that in this segment. I want to focus on something that my friend Katie Faust replied, because she replied to Tim Tebow. And what she said is characteristically, compassionate. She recognizes Tim's ministry, his heart for Jesus, being filled with the Spirit. But she corrects him, and Tim should have paused to say, wait. God's a godly or more godly family, a God-sanctioned family structure is resulting in more sexual abuse? Here's what Katie wrote in part after recognizing Tim's ministry and him as a man. Let's look at the source he cites, Federal Sentencing of Child Pornography, Production of Offenses, October 2021, page 30. It distinguishes between biological fathers and other categories like step-parents, legal guardians, and unrelated men. Of victimizers, it finds biological parent, 18.2%, step-parent, guardians, or parent's partner, 14.2%. And Katie writes this. To be clear, that does not mean that 18.2% of biological dads are abusing children. It means those children who experience abuse of those children, 18.2% are perpetrated by the biological father. At face value, that looks bad for biological dads until you consider how many more children live with their fathers than with unrelated men. So Katie Faust, author, a friend of ours, and a child's rights advocate, writes this. Roughly 64.6% of children live with their biological fathers, either in two-parent households, about 60%, or with their father only, about 40%. By contrast, only about 5% of children at any given time live in stepfamilies, usually with a stepfather. Some additional children live with a mother's cohabitating boyfriend, but those figures are harder to quantify precisely. When you adjust for the population differences, the picture becomes more clear. Children living with an unrelated adult male, like a stepfather or mother's boyfriend, are over 900% more likely to be sexually abused than children living with their biological fathers. In other words, unrelated men are more than 10 times as likely to offend per child in their care. Per child. Multiple kids. So I would suggest that all of us, when we get a statistic like this, when we glean it, that we think for a second, does this match God's design? Does it violate God's design? And again, we're fallen people. We all have the disease of sin. We all fall short. But let's also respect God's wisdom. Now, on the other, this is another example. It's a famous person who is not a Christian. And there's great confusion about Dr. Jordan Peterson. Some people have come to believe he's a Christian. He's not. I think it's hard to argue against the notion that God gifted him a great intellect. And it's an intellect that works in a certain way. Someone, and friends of mine who've worked at the Daily Wire, and Jordan Peterson has a contract with the Daily Wire, and they distribute his work, and they pay him. Someone at the Daily Wire apparently put Jordan Peterson into a position to be involved in not a debate, but a trading of smart aleck remarks. And this is not how Jordan Peterson's mind works. So the event was billed as a Christian debate, 20 atheists, a Jubilee event. So, number one, Dr. Peterson is not a Christian. So he can't debate as a Christian. He observes Christianity. He studies it. He is, I guess, an amateur theologian. But he is not able to defend the faith, to have a reason for the optimism he has, because he doesn't have it. And there's a couple of clips that have gotten huge play online, and there are now leftists and atheists saying that Jordan Peterson was defeated. He was forced to surrender. And the first clip is really just a young guy who's got a quick mind, and he doesn't care about respecting others. He is apparently an atheist, and he's just looking to hurt Peterson. In this debate, it's a very quick clip. My wife wisely pointed out there's probably a lot of longer clips. Maybe there were some good discussions. And in the background, there's a 19 other young atheists who are smirking and laughing. And I guess trying to hold their laughter in, but they're smirking. And this is this first clip.
Why is that relevant?
Because you go to a Catholic church, don't you? Or you've attended recently. You're interested in Catholicism, aren't you?
Sure.
All right. Are you familiar with their doctrines?
Somewhat.
Okay. You're
their
familiar.
Their doctrines are very
deep. How do they regard Mary?
Why are you asking me that?
Because you're a Christian.
You say that. I haven't claimed that.
Oh, what is this? Is this Christians versus atheists?
I don't know.
You don't know where you are right now.
Don't be a smart.
Well,
and I mean
either you're a Christian or you're not.
To you if you're a smart.
Either you're a Christian or you're not. Which one is it?
I could be either of them, but I don't have to tell you.
You don't have to tell me. I was under the impression I was invited to talk to a Christian. Am I not talking to a Christian?
No, you were invited to.
I think everyone should look at the title of the YouTube channel. You're probably in the wrong YouTube video.
You're really quite something, you are.
Aren't I? But you're really quite nothing, right? You're not a Christian.
Okay, I'm done with him.
So that's being marketed as Dr. Jordan Peterson surrenders. And it was a smart aleck remark, and Peterson could have said many things in a better way, but it's just a build-up to the more interesting discussion that occurred. And something that shows that Peterson cannot defend the faith because he does not understand the faith. He's talking to another atheist, and this atheist presents a community college philosophy, community college 101 philosophy question. So first day of community college, you might get a question like this in your philosophy class.
Lie to like save your children, your mom, your dad?
I don't think lying would save them.
Now, can there ever be a circumstance logically that lying could save someone?
Yeah, and if you're steeped in sin, you're likely to live in circumstances like that.
I'll give you an example. If you're like in like Nazi Germany, and it is the case that there's like Jewish people in your attic and you're trying to protect them,
example.
Would you lie to like the Nazis?
I would have done everything I bloody well could, so I wouldn't be in that situation to begin with. It's a hypothetical, and it's not answerable.
Hypotheticals?
No, I can't answer a hypothetical like
what?
That because
did
it's
you eat
far.
Today?
Look,
did you
don't
eat
play games.
I'm not playing games.
Yes,
you
are. If you present me with an intractable moral choice that's stripped of context and you back me into a corner, you're playing game. I just told you I would do everything that I could to make sure that I'm never in that situation. By the time you've got there, you've made so many mistakes that there's nothing you can do that isn't a sin.
So that's the way the conversation began, and it rolled on. So Peterson is clearly frustrated, and I don't blame him because he was put in a terrible position. And I have to believe he didn't know he was there to pretend to be a Christian, and to his credit, he didn't. But in this case, you can't answer this question without having had grace. You can't understand this question or answer it without having experienced the grace of God so that you can understand when you see it's being given to others. So I have been the recipient of grace. Many of us who are Christians have. So maybe a way to answer this, and in this setting with the clock running and these kids who are just there to hurt, maybe it doesn't work. But it may be something like this. You seem to be confusing Christianity with becoming a perfect human being. That's what you seem to be confusing. So to answer your question in that hypothetical, if I was in that situation, I would pray. And I would hope that my faith would be strong enough that as I prayed, I would pray to be delivered from this, to deliver the Jewish people from this, that God would perform a miracle. And what I know, because I read the Bible, is if we truly believe it, if it's in God's will and we truly believe it and we believe he can do it for our whole hearts, if we're not faint of heart in the prayer, we believe he can do it. We have faith the size of a mustard seed. We can say to a mountain, jump into the ocean and it will happen. Jesus said that. Is it the will of Jesus that these Jewish people be put into the hands of the Nazis? I would think not, but sometimes... Because he sees all, he sees over the horizon we can't see, there are things that are allowed to happen in this world for his glory that at the moment we look at and say, this is horrendous. And it is horrendous to see lives end that way. But I would remember what happened with Peter. When Jesus Christ was headed to his death, and Peter said that he wouldn't let it happen, that he would stand in the way and that he would follow Jesus wherever, that he would go with him to the very gates of... Jesus said, no, Peter, no, truly I tell you. Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times this very night. And Peter, of course, in his mind is saying, no, I'm not going to do that. But when Peter became afraid for his life... When he began to imagine him being crucified and whipped the way Jesus was, His broken nature as a human, his fear took over. And Peter did deny the Lord three times, at one point to a teen girl. Oh, I've never known this Jesus. I don't know who he is. I've never been to Nazareth. So I would hope that I would have faith the size of a mustard seed, that I would pray, that I would refuse to lie. I would, in the face of the Nazis, say, yes, I am hiding Jewish people because you're performing great evil. You are mocking God. God will stand as judge. You've already been judged. I stand with the Lord. I would hope I would have that faith. And then if I didn't, and my human fear took over, and I lied. No, there's no Jewish people here. And it saved their lives. I would want to go to the Jewish people and say, I just denied my faith. I just lied for you to God. And I would apologize to God. And I would ask him, the way you forgave Peter when he denied you, will you also give me that grace, Lord? I was afraid. And knowing Jesus, he would. He would. Being Christian doesn't mean being perfect. We'll come back on A Disciple's View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll get to the Tower Babbling and a personal note here in a second. Just a couple of cleanup items. It's about a week now, but I cannot avoid commenting on Marco Rubio and how he has come to, I don't know if it's an evolution or a branding change. I'm assuming that he believes what he's saying. And how he has changed his interaction, particularly with people in Congress, in the Senate. He was talking to Pramila Jayapal, Representative Jayapal, who I've given the nickname Pramila PayPal, because all she really does is raise money and go on TV and to say things like this. I'm from the area where she was given the chance to be a congresswoman. Do you know that it was actually not her turn to run? There was a guy who had served the Democrat Party there faithfully for 20 years, and it was legitimately his turn, and that had been established. And I've seen the email correspondence where they said, we can't have a white man do this. So he's just tossed to the side, and we get Pramila PayPal, or Jayapal. And she was talking to Marco Rubio about this limit on student visas. And just listen here to her point of view versus Rubio's and tell me which one is more orderly. Which one sounds more like our Constitution? Which sounds more like someone safeguarding and stewarding this nation that God has given us to steward? Take a listen.
Where in the Constitution does it say that the Secretary of State can override the First Amendment protections of free speech? Is there a footnote that I missed
somewhere?
There's
no constitutional right to a student visa.
Is there a constitutional right? Does it say somewhere that Marco Rubio gets to determine whether which speech is appropriate and revoke student visas based on what you think constitutes free speech?
There's a statute that says the Secretary of State gets to determine whether someone is a threat. We deny visas every day all over the world.
Do you think that the Immigration and Nationality Act trumps the Constitution of the United States, Mr. Secretary?
Well, Congress can always change the law if you want, but I'm telling you,
Mr. Secretary,
while I have the authority, I will continue to revoke the visas of these people that come here to tear this country.
You said that, Mr. Secretary. Let me reclaim my time, because you are talking about revoking student visas based on what somebody says, and that means that you are trumping the legal Supreme Court, the supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution of the United States.
No one has
why
a right
did
to
the
a
administration,
visa.
Mr. Rubio, why did Privilege. The administration need to use masked, armed, unidentified agents to whisk somebody off the street and deny her counsel for almost 24 hours after
well,
her
you'll
arrest?
You'll have to ask the agencies that did that work. Well, I'm not responsible. That I'm responsible for revoking the visas of these people that come
Secretary
to tear this country
Rubio,
apart.
Secretary Rubio, I'm talking about this particular...
On these college campuses, you have people chanting for the death of Jewish people. They come to our country as guests, get student visas, get taxpayer support, and chant death to the Jewish people. They cheer the assassination of two Jewish diplomats. Why would we not revoke their visas? Why would we say continue to stay here? I mean, just boil this down to an elementary level that's purely ridiculous, pure ridiculousness. And this is a horrible and it's a difficult example. So if you're listening with a young child, give about a 30-second break, okay? Let's say that you're home and you've got a guest over. You've very just recently met this guest and something tragic happens. Your family dog is hit by a car and killed. And you are tragically, tragically upset. And the guest is clapping. Kill more dogs! Kill more dogs! Yes, kill another! Do they stay in your home? Do you say, oh, yes, 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 it's free speech. Come, eat dinner with us. I don't think you do. I mean, you may one time try to figure out if this person's mentally ill and needs help or if you could witness to them, but they probably don't stay there with your sobbing children. We've been given a country to steward, to whom much is given, much is expected. We do not, the Democrats like to say, hate has no home here. Well, unless it inconveniences them from a perspective of trying to overthrow the Electoral College. One more cleanup item. We'll get to the tower babbling in a personal note. This is comparable to what we're talking about stewarding your country. The UK is largely fallen. And so is Ireland, largely fallen. It is, in fact, by some measures, illegal to speak God's word or to carry it with you in Ireland. Listen to this 15-year-old boxer. And she's a boxing champ, by the way. Her name is Caden McKenna. And she's speaking about feeling unsafe in her own community.
Hi, everyone. My name is Caden, and I'm 15 years old. I'm a bit late because I have to travel to a different county to train in now because there's no buildings free in town for our boxing club. I'm here to give my perspective on the IPAS centres and the unvetted moving into my town, my home. I've lived in Blaney my whole life and always praised my town for the spirit and community. As a young person, especially a young girl, I feel more unsafe now than ever. I go to school in Monaghan, which means I get the bus every day, but after a few scary encounters, I can't even walk alone to the bus anymore. Every morning, either my mum just after a night shift or my dad dragging my brother out of bed, one of them has to walk me to the bus. As I walk through what is now known among the young ones as the dodgiest part of Blaney, most of you will know what part I mean, this is so embarrassing as a 15-year-old. I crave freedom. It's only going to get worse if there are more IPAS centres in Blaney. I've had a knot in my stomach since the Glencairn has been closed, thinking, is this going to be an IPAS centre? I'm not against the ones who flee, but who's looking out for me?
She's talking about people who have been brought in, when she says the unvetted, where they refuse to vet who people are who come into Ireland. Because, of course, mass illegal immigration, because it's mass, because they don't vet, it obviously ends up in situations like that young girl's experiencing. By the way, the IPAs are International Protection Accommodation Services in Ireland. In other words, that's where the unvetted people go to get services. And she's a boxing champion who feels unsafe in her own country because they have not stewarded it. Now, that makes it frustrating because we on this program, we actually thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand, wise people like Pramila PayPal. And we do that in our feature called The Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babbling.
It's not a criminal violation to enter the country illegally. It's not a criminal. It's a crime. It's not a crime.
Three sound bites in today's Tower of Babbling. And to be fair, it's almost always three sound bites. This is a University of Washington professor. Washington. Oh, that's obviously Freudian. It's a University of Vermont professor. and he's defending shoplifting.
And they're also concerned about shoplifting. Okay, first of all, what I'm not going to say in there, everybody shoplifts.
That's a professor. Everybody shoplifts. No one should be concerned about it because everybody does it. Does anybody see a theme to today's program? Started in the first segment, talking about order. When God created the universe, he didn't, quote, just create the world and everything in it. He created the rules that govern it. He left behind a rule book and a book on how to live well and abiding with him. He has order written over everything, from the macro level to the micro level. And that's a professor in Vermont who says everybody shoplifts, so no one should worry about it. Disorder. The Democrat Party is wedded to disorder, as is Satan. He cannot create. He cannot laugh. He cannot have joy or love. He can depress, distort, and distract. Next soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. I just played it in the last segment, but I cannot insist enough that you understand this is a point of view in the separate country of Seattle, that illegal immigrants are sacrosanct. They're the blessed ones. They should never go to prison, even when they're driving around drunk at 100 miles per hour, even when they then crash into a trooper, a police trooper named Christopher Gadd, and kill him. This is an attorney.
And when these three circumstances collided, not only did it result in a catastrophic accident, it resulted in the tragic death of Trooper Gadd, but it is not a crime. Not all car accidents are crimes.
It's not a crime to be in the country illegally, except it is. It's not a crime to get drunk and drive, except it is. It's not a crime to be driving 100 miles an hour, except it is. And it's not a crime then, having done all those things, to kill a cop, except it is. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. The Lord created the universe. What we exhale, plants metabolize and use for energy. Same thing with what animals exhale. And yet, the climate change narrative is changing again.
When we were talking about all this cold air, and you say, well, if the planet's warming, how come it's so cold? So we thought we would answer that for you. So Arctic air is contained by the polar vortex. It keeps it up there in the Arctic. However, as the planet is warming, climate change has actually caused significant warming up into the Arctic. So as that warm air comes up into the Arctic, that weakens the polar vortex, that boundary, and it allows that cold air to move south.
Huh. There's a place you can go in Washington State on the Columbia Gorge. It's called Vantage, and they have a wonderful display there. It's what Vantage used to be. Right now, it's a desert, and a beautiful one. Columbia River cutting through it. You can go there and look at all the plants that used to be there, because it used to be a rainforest during the time of the dinosaurs, when there wasn't a single internal combustion engine anywhere, and there wouldn't be for thousands of years, thousands and thousands of years. The world changes. God saw to it, because he's a God of order, not chaos. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I'm just following my orders here.
On a Disciple's View.
Personal note today, I received an email. It wasn't an email, pardon me, it was a YouTube comment from a woman. And I wanted to address this in whole because this is something I will get from time to time. And it's a privilege. And I want to understand, I want you to understand, I know it's a privilege, but I also want to communicate this very broadly. She wrote to me in relation to a video I put up about young men and God. And about men in God, and about how God teaches men to be the pastors of their home, the leaders of their home, and how they're to come under and lift up. In fact, both husband and wife are supposed to come under one another and lift up, and how men are called to love their wives as Christ loved the church, and that we're called to forgive seven times, which is a number of infinity, by the way. So that's what the video is about. And this woman wrote to me and asked if I would be available to counsel her husband and to take phone calls with him because he's lost. And number one, that is an incredible honor that that woman would think so highly of me without knowing of my disorder and the disorder I've invited into my life. And God is a God that forgives and a God who replaces and a God who uses evil for good, always has been. That's what he is and who he is. But on a point of order, as it were, yes, I could take a phone call and it would do nothing. It would do nothing. I mean, it might be nice to talk to someone whose radio program you like. I might say some nice things. I would pray before that and hope that this Holy Spirit would speak through me. But what I wrote back to her, I would say in general, that's disordered. I'm a guy who talks on the radio. Praise God. What a privilege. We were given orders by God Almighty. It is not good that man is alone. Praise God, this man has this wife who's concerned for him. But he also has available to him the brotherhood of Christ. In the order that God created, he created friendship, and he talked about how to be friends. The enemy's kisses multiply, but the wounds of a friend can be trusted. Friends tell each other the truth. Friends are humble. Friends are loving in the way the Bible describes love as a series of verbs. Friends have limits on what they can sponsor in a person's life. I love you. I don't love your alcohol use. God created a church for us to have. He doesn't need it. He loves it, but he doesn't need it. We need it. Instead of reaching out to a radio host who does love you, though never met you, please get your husband to a Christian community where you both have a life group of committed Christians to walk with you. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak his word. We walk in the path of Jesus and make disciples of all nations. So God gives us permission to speak in you together. May his peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View. Do you